Planet Fitness has everything you need to start strong, so you can give everything you've got. From plate-loaded strength equipment and functional training areas to treadmills, stair climbers, and free weights. Our equipment is best in class, and our clubs are right around the corner, so you can make this your strongest year yet. Join the club today and save $28 or more when you join for $1 down, $15 a month. Cancel anytime. Deal ends Friday, January 9th. Are you coming? Planet Fitness. We're all strong on this planet. See club for details.
Hi, thanks for joining. Please make sure you subscribe to follow us on all the various platforms here on the podcast, as well as on YouTube. The stuff we write on Substack, as well as quick takes on Instagram and on Threads. If you're enjoying what we're putting out there, please make sure you're sharing with all your friends and family. And if you have questions or comments about the stuff we're putting out there, please make sure you leave them in comments to us. We'll be more than happy to cover them in future talks.
The other day we were talking in class with some students as it relates to the idea about drugs and dietary supplements and how they are similar and how they are different. And what is the governing principles behind how we go about determining whether or not we can get a therapeutic benefit from taking dietary supplements versus taking drugs, and how they might be similar, how they might be different in terms of how they go about doing their actual actions in the body, and what that means in terms of what we might be able to get from either of them in terms of a therapeutic benefit. One of the kind of things that a lot of people don't understand is the fact that dietary supplements and pharmacological agents, drugs, even though they can have similar actions, do not have the same level of scrutiny to them as relates to whether or not they can provide a therapeutic benefit for it, which can lead some people to think about, if I take a little bit of this dietary supplement and it gives me a benefit, then a whole bunch of it might give me more benefit, even though it can actually cause more harm than good. So let's go ahead and let's take a look at dietary supplements and revisit some of the previous conversations we've had related to dietary supplements and how a little bit might be benefit, but a lot may cause harm. So let's talk about that.
Warning. The following presentation contains information that might contradict what you have previously heard or believed to be true about how the human body works, and contains material that is not suitable for closed-minded individuals. Enjoy.
To begin, let's go ahead and let's try to get some definitions out of the way once again to make sure that we're all on the same page. Because one of the things that we tend to get kind of trapped in is echo chambers where we are saying similar things or using similar words, but actually meaning different things. When we start looking at and discussing dietary supplements, what we have to remember is that, as the name entails, it's a supplement. It's something that is to be consumed or to be used in addition to what is normally occurring within our diet, or is to be there to take the place of something that's missing within the diet, a nutrient, a vitamin, a mineral that we should be getting from our diet, but we're not getting from our diet. So it's generally difficult to see what we might see as a therapeutic benefit from taking a supplement, because the response from the supplement can be done or can be seen as something replacing something that wasn't already there in the diet, which means that we're actually getting back to where we should be in terms of our normal nutrient balance. This is where it's difficult to see if a response is coming from the supplement itself or coming from our diet or coming from a combination of the supplement with our diet. The other thing that we can have problems in terms of the terminology and the definition of what we're talking about, dietary supplements and even drugs in that manner, is what we mean when we're talking about effectiveness. And when we're talking about effectiveness, we're not talking whether or not the thing has an effect, the substance is able to cause something to come about. What we're actually talking about is we're talking about how well is it in terms of causing the effect relative to other things, relative to other possible treatments, other possible drugs, other possible dietary supplements. And this is where we can look at some of the literature in terms of the idea about effectiveness, or we can look at it in terms of a statistical thing, which is how most effectiveness definitions come about. When we're saying that something has an effectiveness, something is effective, what we're saying is that it has an effect size statistically. That is where it's the difference that we see in between groups within the study, where we have a benefit that comes about that is in favor of doing the supplement, doing the drug, relative to not doing the supplement or not doing the drug. A lot of people look at this in terms of a placebo versus a non-placebo, a treatment versus a placebo, but that's not really what we're talking about. We're talking about this effectiveness. We'll get to what the placebo issue here is in a second. the idea about effectiveness when we start looking at this idea about the dietary supplements in particular, and the idea about a little giving benefit, whereas a lot may have some sort of detriment to it, is the idea of whether it is apparently effective, possibly effective, or is apparently ineffective. And once again, this is coming from definitions from a lot of the literature reviews that are out there as relates to the ergogenic aids, the dietary supplements, and the research that we have into those dietary supplements, where the apparently effective supplements means that most people will get a general empirical evidentiary indicated benefit from taking the metabolite, the dietary supplement, that the dietary supplement does what it is proposed to do, that it is safe to take, that meaning that has limited adverse effects to taking it. That's when we mean when we say that that there's an apparent effect, or it is apparently effective in terms of the dietary supplement. The next kind of idea in terms of this dietary supplement is whether it is possibly effective or has a possible effectiveness. And this is where there is a theoretical benefit or a theoretical basis for the supplement to be effective. That is, the chemistry, the metabolite meets with other metabolites, other chemicals in the body that have some sort of benefit or is similar to something that is of benefit for us in terms of our physiology. And so with this theoretical basis for using the supplement in terms of effectiveness, that's where we get this possible effective or having a supplement that is possibly effective. Where, yes, the theoretical side of it, the hypothetical side of it says it should work, but we don't have empirical evidence to explain how it might work or how it might be safe to take. Most of what we think about in terms of the benefits coming from the supplements is going to fall into those kind of two categories, whether it's apparently effective or possibly effective. But then there's a whole host of other supplements that are out there that, even though they get these purported benefits from taking it, they are apparently ineffective. That is, we don't have a scientific rationale for why it's doing what it's supposed to do, or the empirical evidence does not support that purported benefit that is being marketed to the individuals. And so when it comes to a lot of the dietary supplements, the proposed help that we get from these dietary supplements, we're talking about chemicals that are going to somehow change metabolism in order to provide a therapeutic benefit for what we're attempting to get to. There are so many dietary supplements out there, it would be kind of asinine for myself to sit here and spend the next hours discussing each and every of the supplements out there. I'm putting a link into the descriptor for the National Institutes of Health catalog for dietary supplements, which includes the indications for whether they are apparently effective, whether they are apparently ineffective, whether they are possibly effective in terms of their categorization. So you have that evidence for you to use for whichever kind of dietary supplement that you're thinking about using. But when we start looking at this idea about the purported benefits or the effectiveness of the dietary supplements, one of the things we have to look at is whether or not it's actually coming from the supplement and whether or not we actually know the what's usually referred to as the dosage response for the dietary supplement or for the drug, if we think about the dietary supplements being a drug, because there's not really a big difference, metabolically speaking, between a drug and a dietary supplement, as they're both intended to have some sort of control or regulatory change on metabolism in an attempt to get a therapeutic benefit from taking that substance, whether it's a drug or a dietary supplement. And this is where we have to get into another set of definitions before we get into the bigger context of the conversation. And that is what most people think of as the placebo effect. And a lot of people talk about dietary supplements as being nothing more than placebos, what everybody talks about as the quote-unquote sugar pill. That is kind of true, but it's also kind of false. And that's because of the misconception about what placebo is and what placebo means. The placebo effect is a statistical thing. It's a thing that comes from stats, from analysis of studies, from analysis of groups within studies. where the placebo effect is the indication that my non-therapeutic group is getting a benefit that the therapeutic group is getting. And it's a statistics thing. It's where we indicate that there is no difference between the two groups. The rationale that we have, the physiological rationale, is actually a neurophysiological rationale that goes into a psychological change that can take place due to the fact that I think that I'm getting something that has therapeutic benefit. That thinking that I have a therapeutic benefit is what's referred to as a Hawthorne effect. And it's that Hawthorne effect that is giving us the idea that simply taking the supplement is going to have a benefit for me. Taking the drug is going to have a benefit for me. Or even if I'm given something that I'm told is a drug, it will have a benefit for me because I'm going to change slightly how my stress hormones are coming about, how other hormonal responses are coming about, because I think I'm getting something of therapeutic benefit. And because I think I'm getting something of therapeutic benefit, that means that I'm going to change how my body's functioning based off the idea that I'm getting something of therapeutic benefit. It also leads into a secondary effect that we have to deal with whenever we're going towards a pro-health behavior, a behavior that is going to improve my overall health status, my overall level of being healthy. And that is if I decide to change one aspect of my lifestyle for a benefit towards my health, other aspects of my lifestyle will change with it.
Planet Fitness has everything you need to start strong, so you can give everything you've got. From plate-loaded strength equipment and functional training areas to treadmills, stair climbers, and free weights. Our equipment is best in class, and our clubs are right around the corner, so you can make this your strongest year yet. Join the club today and save $28 or more when you join for $1 down, $15 a month. Cancel anytime. Deal ends Friday, January 9th. Are you coming? Planet Fitness. We're all strong on this planet. See club for details.
And when we start looking at a lot of the health issues, particularly start looking at a lot of the health issues come from the dietary supplement side or the change of diet or the change of activity. If we change one aspect of that, we're going to change other aspects with it, which means it's very difficult to indicate within an intervention, within a study, that the benefits are coming solely from taking the dietary supplement versus all the other things that are coming into play, because we cannot, in terms of research design, control for all those other aspects. Because if I am trying to lose weight and I start noticing that I'm losing weight by changing my diet slightly, I'm going to try to change my diet a little bit more, or I'm going to try to increase my level of activity. Or if I'm increasing my level of activity, I may change my diet in accordance with the fact that I'm changing my level of activity, which makes me feel better about the fact that I am being more active. It's almost like a reward benefit kind of construct, where as I start to change one aspect of my life, I'm going to change other aspects of my life in order to get the compounding effect of all of those aspects together, taking me from being unhealthy to taking me to be healthy. And so with those two kind of ideas out of the way, the definitions about effectiveness and the idea about what kind of benefit we can get from the dietary supplements, from the drugs that we might be using as a means to help with obtaining changes in our overall physique, our overall body composition, our overall level of health. Let's go ahead and let's talk a little bit about dietary supplements. Let's talk a little bit about the governance of dietary supplements, at least with the United States, the governance of dietary supplements with the United States, and why we have to be very careful about taking too much of any type of dietary supplement, as we don't have the same level of governance that we have with drugs as it relates to the dietary supplements. And when we start looking at this, the dietary supplements are products that are intended to supplement the diet, that contain minerals and nutrients, that contain other chemicals that may normally be ingredients within our diet, or may be supplements to those minerals that are in the diet, or those vitamins that are within the diet, or metabolized within the diet, that are meant to cause specific metabolic changes, that are intended to cause changes in our overall health, that are intended to cause changes in our rates of metabolism, that can lead to increased utilization of fuels, and by increased utilization of fuels can lead to changes in body composition in conjunction with the changes of other lifestyle aspects, diet and exercise. Almost any of the things that do not come directly from the foods we should think about as being dietary supplements, whether those are the multivitamins, the multiminerals, any type of carbohydrate or amino acid powders that are being consumed, anything that is meant to be consumed outside of the normal foods that we take as a means to increase total dietary intake of that nutrient, of that metabolite, or of the constituent, the molecules that make up the nutrients that are necessary for the tissues of the bodies in order to maintain their normal homeostatic regulation. Along with that, any of the nutrients or metabolites that can be considered herbal or botanical in terms of substance that are not specifically manufactured or extracted and refined into pharmacological agents, drugs, are also considered to be dietary supplements, whether or not they are specific nutrients, or whether or not they are specific metabolites, or whether or not they are specific chemicals that may or may not be directly involved with the regulation or control of metabolism. And that's a key point here, is that these are substances that are not intended to be ingested alone or in place of a meal, or advertised, if this goes into the governance area here, or advertised as conventional foods or sold as conventional foods or conventional meals or as a diet. These are really, if we think about in terms of the governance, which we'll get to here, these are unregulated substances. These are substances that we do not know actually have a scientific empirical value to taking it. There is a lot of research that goes into specific types of substances and specific types of dietary supplements, specific types of amino acids, specific types of amino acid metabolites, specific types of botanical extracts that we do know have therapeutic benefit that we've talked about previously, such as creatine, such as ephedra alkaloids, that by themselves have a distinct therapeutic benefit in, as relates to changes of physique, changes of metabolism, changes of homeostatic regulation within the body that are not controlled as if they are drugs, even though they have the same type of regulatory action, the same type of homeostatic action as other drugs might have. Whereas drugs, on the other hand, are pharmacological agents that are ingested in order to alter specific tissue functions that are chemically similar to hormones, chemically similar to metabolites that are known to regulate metabolism, regulate homeostasis within the body. This is where we get into that kind of gray area as to whether or not a supplement is a drug or a drug is a supplement. Because any metabolite that we have in our body that has a chance to regulate metabolism has a chance to be a hormone. And since it has a chance to be a hormone, it has a chance to be a drug. You have to think about drugs as being kind of chemicals that are meant to be hormones that may not actually be the hormones, where hormones are just the chemical messengers within the body that we use in order to maintain our homeostasis, that we use to maintain our optimal performance throughout the day. And this is where for things like drugs, we need to have prescriptions to get those drugs, or they may be drug-like substances that we might find in everyday things that we eat or drink, things like caffeine. Caffeine is a drug. Things like nicotine is a drug. Those are things that we can get without having prescriptions, ibuprofen, acetaminophen, those kinds of things that we can get without needing a prescription, whereas a lot of the other drugs that we think about as being hormones or controlling in terms of hormone actions are things that we're going to need to have prescriptions for, things that are going to somehow improve health, somehow cure what's going on with the body in terms of having illness or disease. Whereas dietary supplements are substances that are not regulated in that same fashion as the drugs, even though they may have the same or similar responses that we might see within the body. These are things that, based off of regulation, at least within the United States regulation, are not things that are meant to be advertised or sold as ways to improve health or to cure or rectify any type of disease or illness, even though they're taken as those things. When we start thinking about a lot of these dietary supplements, a lot of the drugs and pharmacological agents that we think about, the idea of what we are trying to get from these dietary supplements for a number of them is that we're trying to take them as a possible pro-hormone for one of the normally acting hormones that we have in the body. This is where we have people who take a large amounts of types of amino acids based off of the rodent researches that has shown that infusion of these amino acids within the bloodstream, L-arginine is one of them, will lead to growth hormone secretion within the rodents. This is also where people will take DHEA, androstenedione, androstenediol, in terms of a pro-hormone as relates to the ability to produce steroids within the body, testosterone to be specific, or they'll take creams that contain those substances as a means to improve the amount of testosterone they have in the body as a way to improve their physique, even though there's no real evidence to support the use for those substances as a pro-hormone for getting the increase in those hormones in the body. One of the things we need to understand also about most of the dietary supplements is that there's limited scientific evidence or medical evaluation of the substances as they're sold to the public. There is growing levels of research as it relates to the use of dietary supplements as a means to improve health. There is a wave of research out there as it relates to dietary supplements and the purported benefits that we see being advertised. But very few of these supplements are shown to actually absolutely work. That means that there is constantly a therapeutic benefit to them in terms of their effectiveness. That means that if we do look at the studies, taking the supplement is effective relative to not taking the supplement or taking something else. That is where the effect size is always in favor of taking the supplement. The evaluation stipulating the effectiveness of supplements also tends to be highly biased based off of either the population being studied. A lot of the supplemental studies that are out there, the studies on dietary supplements, are taking people who are highly active already, people who are athletic already, and looking at the dietary supplement in that population. And because that population is not necessarily a generalizable population to everybody within the world, it's very hard to stipulate that what we see in that population is going to be generalized to everybody else, even though it's sold as such. And this is where we have to remember everybody's going to fall somewhere along the normal curve in terms of their responses to any type of nutrient, any type of lifestyle change, any type of dietary supplement change, even any type of drug change. That's where drug effectiveness has waxes and wanes, has changes that we might see within the population based off of where people will fall within the normal curve. That's where we have this idea about responders and non-responders and always respond, sometimes respond, those kinds of ideas within this responsiveness that we might see. And so it's very difficult to stipulate that you will always have some sort of response to the dietary supplements.
Planet Fitness has everything you need to start strong, so you can give everything you've got. From plate-loaded strength equipment and functional training areas to treadmills, stair climbers, and free weights. Our equipment is best in class, and our clubs are right around the corner, so you can make this your strongest year yet. Join the club today and save $28 or more when you join for $1 down, $15 a month. Cancel anytime. Deal ends Friday, January 9th. Are you coming? Planet Fitness. We're all strong on this planet. See club for details.
But what ends up happening is that some people will start saying, okay, I get a little bit of response by taking a small amount of this dietary supplement without knowing what is the actual recognized dose response for a given supplement. That is, how much gram of the supplement is necessary per mass unit of the body, per kilogram of the body, as we use that as kind of a reference point as a relationship for metabolic rate, or how much gram do I need based off of what my basal metabolic rate or off of my total energy expenditure might be, or off of the metabolism taking place within the tissues where I'm hoping to get the benefit coming from. And this is where we have to take into account that Hawthorne effect coming into play, the alterations of behavior in order to meet the drive to improve performance is going to lead to changes that we're going to attribute to the dietary supplement that may not actually come from the dietary supplement. And because dietary supplements are going to have some sort of physiological effect on the body, taking a little may have a small physiological benefit to it. But just because of a small physiological benefit, or excuse me, just because of a physiological benefit from taking a small amount of an active ingredient, a drug or a dietary supplement that will act as a drug, doesn't mean taking more will have an additional benefit to it. Taking too much of a substance can cause a dysregulation to take place within the body and can cause more harm than good. And this is where a lot of the adverse effects that we see with dietary supplements come into effect. This is also where we see a lot of adverse effects come into play when we start looking at drug adverse effects. This is also where we start hearing about or reading about in the news the ideas of these overdose issues for a lot of the illicit drugs that tend to make the headlines within the news, where I get a little bit of benefit from taking it. And when I take it, I get changes in receptors on the cells. Those are the little things on each of the cells of the body that are meant to respond to all of the chemical messengers going around the body, or even other nutrients that the cells need in order to function correctly. And so what taking the dietary supplement or taking the drug is going to do is it's going to have an impact on those receptors. It's going to basically cause one of three things to take place within the cells as it relates to triggering the receptors or as it relates to utilization of the receptors, based on whether or not the cell needs to respond to the signals or not. And that is, it's going to have an upregulation effect, that is, I'm going to have more of those receptors available. A downregulation effect is where I'm going to have less of those receptors available. Or if I happen to have some sort of mixed signaling taking place within the cell, I'm going to have a change in sensitivity to those signals. And this is where we have to look at, are those chemical messengers, whether they are hormones or whether they are coming from the dietary supplements, are they going to be agonistic to each other? Are they going to be synergistic to each other? That is, are they going to cause the same effect to take place? Or are they going to be antagonistic to each other? Are they going to compete with each other in terms of the signaling that takes place? If I have a dietary supplement that is going to act synergistically, that's going to act in conjunction with a naturally occurring or normally occurring hormonal signal as it relates to metabolic functions, that can cause a change in the receptors and the way in which the receptors are responding, because the cells are being overloaded with the signal. And that can lead to a downregulation effect. That is where I stop responding to naturally occurring signals from the overabundance of the signals coming into play. That can make it harder for me in the long term to respond normally once the dietary supplement is no longer being taken, once the drug is no longer being administered. On the other side, if I'm taking something that is acting antagonistically to a naturally occurring metabolite or naturally occurring hormone, I'm going to upregulate the receptors. I'm going to put more receptors into the cells in an attempt to counterbalance the blocking signals that the drug or the dietary supplement has for me, which means I'm going to need more of the substance to get the same benefit or the same response that I'm seeing when I took it the first time. This is something that we see like with drinking coffee or drinking a caffeinated beverage, where we need more of the caffeine with each subsequent time we consume it, because of the downregulation of receptors and upregulation of receptors that the caffeine is interacting with. In the case of the downregulation, it's with those stimulant receptors, the dopamine receptors, the epinephrine or adrenaline receptors, the adrenergic receptors, or the upregulation of the adenosine receptors, because the caffeine that's in coffee or the caffeine in the caffeinated beverages is going to act synergistically with the stimulant hormones, the stimulant signals, the dopamine, the norepinephrine, noradrenaline, the epinephrine, adrenaline hormones, neurotransmitters. It's going to act antagonistically to the adenosine hormone, the adenosine neurotransmitter, that's going to allow me to have the benefits I see from consuming the coffee, consuming the caffeinated beverage. However, over time, because we have to start to change how much of that beverage that we're consuming, we can start having adverse effects from over-consuming that product. This is where we start having the adverse effects of over-caffeination. Same thing happens with other dietary supplements, particularly with the quote-unquote thermogenic agents or the quote-unquote fat burners, because the fat burners are going to act very similar to that coffee in terms of the active ingredients that we see within the fat burners, even those that are labeled as caffeine-free. The active ingredients within them are to mimic the naturally occurring hormones that are going to block the hormones that will build lipids while stimulating the receptors for the hormones that will break lipids down. That's the indication for those drugs. The problem is that those drugs are going to act as sympathetic mimics. They're going to act as stimulants, which means that we're going to have very similar effects to what we might see with taking coffee, where we're going to have, we'll have a little bit more alertness, we'll have a little bit more energy quotes around that while taking the supplements. But the problem is that because they're coming in an unregulated dose, that is, we're not getting in the milligrams that we might get with coffee or with a soda or even the energy drinks. We're getting it in an unregulated dosage, we may be getting too much of that stimulant, which will lead to adverse effects. And that's one of the reasons why the ephedra alkaloids are not sold anymore, because of all the adverse effects that we saw with the ephedra alkaloids, even though ephedra alkaloids by themselves in small doses do have a very good therapeutic benefit as relates to reduction of fat mass. But the problem is that it goes into this, well, if a little bit is good for me, then a lot must be better. And the problem is that it causes me to build up too much heat. It causes me to have cardiovascular effects that mimic me overdoing the stimulants. And that can lead to adverse effects. And that leads to a whole host of cardiovascular and cardiometabolic and cardiorespiratory diseases that occur from overusing those substances, from overusing those stimulants that were meant to allow me to lose body fat. Even though the idea here is that we're trying to do things that would help me lose body fat. And that's because of all the adverse effects that are going to come about, because once again, a little bit of that dose, a little bit of that stimulant is good. However, too much of that stimulant is bad. The other thing comes into play with that too much idea is that if we have a little bit that's going to benefit me metabolically, having too much may actually tip me onto the other side of the balance point that we want to try to maintain as relates to homeostasis. One of these things that we know, even though it still gets advertised as being a benefit, are the antioxidants. Antioxidants, as we've talked about previously, have benefit. They're going to be beneficial in terms of reducing oxidative stress in the body. But that's only up to a certain point, only up to the point that we need the antioxidants in order to help control oxidative stress. However, if we start to overconsume those antioxidants, we're actually going to put ourselves into an oxidative stress from overconsuming antioxidants. And this is where having too much of the vitamin C, too much of the other antioxidants, this is where the idea about those superfoods and having those superfoods being loaded with antioxidants is going to not necessarily be of health benefit, because if I don't need the additional antioxidants, having those substances in the body can actually cause oxidative stress to take place simply because of the presence of those antioxidants in the body. And so we don't necessarily need all of those various antioxidants. We don't need all of those various vitamins. We don't need all those various minerals in excessive amounts. We need them in just the right amount. And that's where we have to look at what we don't get in terms of the dietary supplements is what is the appropriate level? What is the appropriate amount that is needed in order to have benefit? Do I need vitamin Bs? Yes. Do I need vitamin Bs in excessively high dosage? Well, not necessarily. In fact, excessively high doses can actually be counterintuitive to what is necessary for balancing of the body in terms of its overall homeostatic regulatory effects. And so when we start looking at what we need, what we don't need, and how to go about getting to that level of appropriateness. What we're missing in most of the dietary supplements is that dose response. How much is the appropriate amount to take? And if I don't know the dose response, I'm basically becoming my own test subject. And what is going to work for me is going to work for me, but it may not work for somebody else. And this is what is lacking in the ability to have good conversations about dietary supplements and how much of the dietary supplement is necessary in order to have benefits and always have benefits. And at what point in time do the benefits start to get lost? When we start looking at the dietary supplements, we start looking at the benefits that can get from the dietary supplements. One of the things we have to start thinking about, one of the things we have to always keep in the back of our mind is, how much is the appropriate dose? And is there a known appropriate dose for me for a given dietary supplement? And for very few of the dietary supplements, do we actually have this number? Very few dietary supplements that are being sold in the quote-unquote health food stores, do we actually know what is the therapeutic dose that gives me benefit? And just because we don't know the therapeutic dose doesn't mean, just because we don't know the therapeutic dose doesn't mean that a little bit more than what I'm currently taking is going to give me additional benefit, because we're trying to balance out what point do I get therapeutic benefit and at what point do I start getting toxicity issues? At what point do I start having interference with my normal metabolic process, my normal metabolic homeostasis? At what point in time does the dietary supplement take me from having a health benefit and make it a hurt benefit? That is, it takes me from moving towards a pro-health and it takes me into an anti-health. It takes me from reducing my inflammation and increasing the ability for the tissues to grow to increasing my inflammation and hurting my tissues' ability to grow. And this is where we have to kind of take into account, what is the science telling us as it relates to each of the dietary supplement? And one of the things that we looked at with a couple of students previously is that fat burner, that thermogenic agent, do they actually work? And the conclusion that we were able to draw is they work, but they're not as effective as simply doing dietary changes and improvement in your exercise. This is where we start looking at all of the dietary supplements that are purported to benefit in terms of glucose metabolism in the blood. And one of the things we have to look at in terms of the idea about glucose metabolism in the blood, or glucose metabolites in the blood, or glucose in the blood, is why is there going to be elevated levels of glucose in the blood? And the reason why we see elevated levels of glucose in the blood is because of chronic levels of inflammation. Glucose goes up in the blood when we have an inflammatory response, when we have an immune response. It's a way that the body is prepping the body to have extra activity within the immune cells. And immune cells need glucose in order to do their metabolism in terms of their fuel source. And so when we start getting sick, when we start having any type of inflammation, we'll see elevated levels of glucose in the blood. And so if we start looking at the dietary supplements that are supposed to have an impact on blood glucose levels, if they don't do anything to either support the movement of glucose into the cells by regulating the glucose transporters, and this is where people kind of get incorrect information in terms of when insulin is needed and when insulin is not needed and where insulin is needed versus where insulin is not needed. If we don't do anything in terms of changing a couple of the glucose transporters, and that's only done with a couple of the dietary supplements that are usually done in conjunction with diabetic medication. The only other way to help regulate glucose levels is to reduce inflammation stress. And so if a dietary supplement is not going to reduce inflammation stress to help regulate cortisol, help regulate other inflammatory hormones, other interleukin hormones, other leukotriene hormones that raise the level of inflammation. If we don't have those signals taking place, then that supplement's not going to do anything to help regulate the glucose levels, even if it may be something taken as a medication in an attempt to increase the amount of glucose being excreted, say, in urine. If we don't do anything to control the level of inflammation in the body, the glucose levels will stay elevated simply because of the hormone signals that are there that are saying, get all of those glucose stores that we have in the body and increase the glucose availability for those immune cells that need the glucose in order to perform. And this is where having various levels of stimulants within the body can have some change within glucose levels that can modify fuel sources being used within the body. This is the idea behind a lot of the fat burners, particularly for individuals who are over fat that are attempting to lose body fat by taking these dietary supplements. That's kind of the idea behind it, even though it's not going to necessarily improve their metabolic state without causing any other changes to their inflammation levels. Very similar ideas as it relates to some of the dietary supplements that come about as goes into the calcium metabolism and bone health. You can take all these calcium metabolism dietary supplements, all these bone health supplements, but the thing with the way in which the bones function is that bone is a loading tissue, which means that its hormone responses, its intracellular responses, is all about, am I being used? Are the bones being loaded? Are the bones being tugged on by the muscles? Is there activity on the bones that are placing stress on the bones? And without those stresses on the bones will not respond in order to grow, in order to become healthier. Quotes around that. Even if I'm taking all of these bone health supplements that are being advertised for me to take, similar with the glucose levels and the diabetic medications and the diabetic supplements. If I'm not doing anything to help control the inflammation levels, I'm not doing anything to help improve the anabolic responses within the body, the tissue growing responses in the body relative to the inflammation responses, nothing's going to change in terms of those signals. Whether I am taking the GLP agonists, the GLP synergists that are all the rave right now in terms of the weight loss, if I'm not doing anything to supplement the actual metabolic signals in the long term, those drugs aren't going to do anything. We're going to have rebound, the quotes around that, weight gain once those drugs are stopped. Same thing happens in terms of the changes that we see from the other supplements. Because even though those supplements have a therapeutic benefit, even those drugs have a therapeutic benefit, if we're not doing anything to cause long-term changes in the cellular responses, in the way in which metabolism is taking place in the body, we're not going to see benefits coming out from just doing that drug regimen, just doing that dietary supplement regimen. And that's because it's very difficult to separate the evidence that we have that shows support towards using just the dietary supplement or just the drug, independent of other pro-lifestyle changes. And when we look at stuff in aggregate, the evidence showing support towards most of the dietary supplements is inconclusive and tends to not be generalizable. When we start looking at the evidence as it relates to a lot of the drugs that we take as that are meant for pro-health behaviors, independent of changes to other pro-health behaviors, which is they tend to not have long-lasting effects, which is why if you look at the advertisements, it's always in conjunction with changes in diet and exercise, in conjunction with. And that's because we know that the thing does not act independent of the other metabolic signals that come about. With the drugs, we know this is the dosage that we want to give you that will not have a toxic event, that will have a therapeutic event only. We don't have that with many of the dietary supplements that are taken for therapeutic gain. A lot of that idea about the therapeutic gain, a lot of that, the idea that we've had about specific types of dietary supplements, we've covered in previous discussions in terms of, is there a best dietary supplement? What is the benefit that I get from creatine and from protein supplementation? And those are linked within the descriptor for this episode. I highly recommend listening to those. If you're interested in specific types of dietary supplements, once again, I've put a link to the NIH's database in the descriptor for this episode. If there are specific dietary supplements you would like us to discuss in more detail, please feel free to let us know. We're more than happy to cover specific ones in more detail than just the generalized idea that we went through today. Thanks for listening. Hopefully you got a little bit out of the conversation relates to the dietary supplement and the fact that we don't have the necessary evidence for having always positive purported benefits, or the idea about if a little is good, a lot doesn't necessarily make it automatically better. If you're liking what we put out there, please make sure you give us that big 5-star rating, give us that big thumbs up. Let us know that we're doing a good job. Share with all your friends and family. Follow us here on the podcast as well as on YouTube, the written stuff in Substack, as well as the quick takes that we post to Instagram and to Threads. Please stay tuned for further discussions, further talks about some of the myths and misconceptions out there and how we could go about utilizing scientific-based evidence to live a healthier life.